Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
What's up, everybody? This is Ron Scalzo from Return to Earth and Q-Ball, and you are hanging with the sexy gentleman of Talking Metal, live or not so live, depending on where you're from or when you're listening.
What's up? This is Dave Navarro, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hey, this is Devin Townsend from Strapping Young Lad, and you are listening to Talking Metal.
Hi, this is Herman Z. German Werber. You're listening to Talking Metal.
Hey, this is Mike Portnoy from Dream Theater, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hi, this is Amanda Somerville, and you are listening to Talking Metal.
Hi, everyone. This is KK Downing of Judas Priest, and you're listening to Talking Metal. So you know what to do. Crank it up.
Hi, this is Ian Hale from Judas Priest, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hey, everybody, this is Rob Halford, the Metal God from Judas Priest, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
I am Dan Lorenzo from The Cursed, Hades Nonfiction, and who knows what else, and I love the show Talking Metal, which is what you are listening to right now.
This is Michael Grant with Endeavor After, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
What's up, Rubbinex? This is Billy Milano from SOD and MOD, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hi, this is Ozzy Osbourne, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
From Smith's Bar in New York City, Midtown Manhattan, this is Talking Metal Live. Tonight's guests, Amanda Somerville and Q-Ball from Return to Earth. And now, here's your hosts, Mark and John.
Wow, a live intro on the what was supposed to be Talking Metal Live, Bionic.
Correct.
Canceled on us tonight at the last
minute.
There was
a death in the family, and we're very sorry about anybody who dies.
Yeah. Although it kind of is strike two against Bionic after they lost the last episode. Accidentally deleted. Frankie Benelli interview. Todd Youth. A lot of great stuff lost. And we have our friend Ed in Kentucky. This guy's worked with the FBI and everything. He's currently trying to recover the files.
Excellent.
Here's
what
he has to say.
We've got the top people on this.
Yeah. Here's what he has to say. Bud Friendly, feel free to put a drink on my tab for that wonderful intro.
Yes, thank you, Bud Friendly.
Worth a beer for sure. Anyways, Ed types in, "Hey, Mark, how are you doing?" "I'm good, thanks, Ed. I've spent the last few days finishing up a project that had me out of town every day, so I haven't begun to look at the drive yet. I also need to get a SCSI card from one of my partners to put into my system so that I can boot the drive up. It's been so long since I've needed that stuff that I've sent it all to the recycling center." He goes on to say he's going to get to it soon.
I'm pretty sure it's gone, but Ed, if you can recover this, man, You are a genius. I think you're a genius to begin with, but you are really a genius if you can recover this.
Yeah, and he goes on with some technical stuff, but then he finishes up his email to me saying, anyways, I hope you had a good week, and I will keep you updated on my progress. I see that you have a couple podcasts up, so I will gladly listen to you guys this week. I was a Keel fan back in the 80s, so I'm looking forward to that interview.
Cool. I have to say, I believe our cocktail waitress here at Smith's has both a cock and a tail.
Anyways.
Love it. Mark, I got a letter, too. You want me to read it really quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
You're not going to believe this. Remember the Fuse blog?
Yes.
Fuse blog? Bud Friendly remembers the Fuse blog, right?
Oh, yeah, totally.
He might be the only one, but he does remember it, yeah.
We have a new letter to the Fuse blog, a new comment.
From what, 2008?
Yes. It's from Waris, W-A-R-I-S, received on the post, MMA and Metal. And I remember that post. It was Danielle, who was on Talking Metal on Fuse. She was the person who liked Motley Crue. Do you remember her, Mark?
Yes, I do remember her.
She was a MMA person. And guess what this says?
What does it say?
Can I read it?
Yeah, go ahead.
I can't hear. I don't have headphones, so I'm a little bit out of it. It says, Dear Sir / Madam, this is an actual comment on the Fuse website. We are paramount manufacturers and exporters of quality sports goods as well as sportswears. Boxing gloves, MMA wears, and shorts. And then it goes on to say that they're from Pakistan, and if you want to contact them, it's at WalidStaplesExports.com.
Wow. Very
so people from Pakistan are commenting on
like
the Talking Metal on
it's
Fuse
a spam
blog.
Comment. Yeah, I think it's a spam comment.
See, I thought that was an actual fan. I guess not.
No, I don't think so.
No.
Anyways, we're going to get into some music right now. Earlier today, I hooked up on the telephone with Amanda Somerville. And we are going to get into an interview with her right now. This is
Talking Metal.
Nice.
Sorry, did I jump my cue?
Oh, boy. Things are a little out of hand here. The Yankee game was on. Did the Yankee game end? Did suddenly the football game's on? I don't know what happened. But we are at Smith's in Midtown Manhattan, 8th Avenue, 44th Street. This is If I Had a Wish by Kiske Somerville, and then we'll get into my interview with Amanda here on Talking Metal. On the line, we have Amanda checking in with us. Amanda, how are you today?
Hello, I'm doing fine, thank you. And yourself?
Oh, I'm doing really good, and I'm very excited by some of the new material that you have coming out. I guess it's out already. I purchased it on iTunes last week. Your new record with Mikhail Kiska. Can you tell us how you got involved with him?
Well, thanks. First of all, bless you for purchasing the album. I'm really happy to hear that you like it.
Yeah, I do.
I'm really excited about it too. It's great, and I mean, to be featured alongside such a legendary voice in the scene, it's quite an honor.
And how did you guys first meet up and decide to do this record?
Actually, I was contacted by Matt Sinner to ask if I would like to do this duet album with Mikhail. And so apparently from, what I heard after the fact, it started out as an idea of Serafino Perugino's, the CEO of Frontiers Records.
Right.
And who's always cooking up schemes for Michael to do, which is so cool, I mean, that's basically a musician's dream to have a label boss be your biggest fan and try and, come up with these projects and stuff for you. So that's how that started. And they apparently had a list of people that they would like to have, try and get to sing with Michael. And it ended up being me. So that's pretty cool.
Very cool. And can you talk about who else is involved in the project?
Yeah, well, Matt Sinner from Primal Fear and Sinner, he did he was the big head honcho, did all the production side of things and wrote most of the songs. Then Magnus Carlsen, great guitar player, also co-wrote a bunch of songs with Matt together and played guitar on the album. Martin Schmidt played most of the drums, and Jimmy Krezich did the keyboards from Voodoo Circle, amongst other things. And then Sander Thomans did some guitars as well and co-wrote three songs with me for the album as well.
Cool. And I saw the videos on YouTube for Silence and If I Had a Wish, and they look great. And just wondering, where you guys shot those? Is that like an old opera house or something?
Yeah, that was so cool. That was the opera house in Nuremberg. And then that was for Silence. And then for If I Had a Wish, we were in an old bathing hall, like an Art Deco, turn of the century kind of deal, with a huge, you saw those marble staircases going up. And I mean, the place was ginormous, but it was also freezing. It was so
right.
Cold. When you see us shaking and you can see, our breath is crystallized in there, the clouds coming out from when we're singing. Oh man, it was so cold.
And you are obviously American, but you are now living in Germany and have been there for quite a while. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, I bounced back and forth from Germany and the Netherlands mainly.
Okay. What originally brought you from Michigan to Europe?
Oh, I was a young romantic girl in love.
Oh, okay.
And so love brought me over to Europe, but I stayed because of music. So I met up with Zasha and the rest of the guys at the Gate Studio, and so that's what kept me over here.
Cool. And so do you get back to the States that much?
Oh yeah. I couldn't have done this all these years if I didn't. I get home every 2 to 3 months. I never let, I think the longest I've ever gone is like 4.5 months or something, which is like way too long for me because my family and I are really close. And so,
right.
Skype only goes so far with the whole, video, conferencing calls, whatever. It's a lot better. I talk to my family every single day, but yeah,
okay.
I'm back every at least 2 or 3 months.
Great. I was reading on your website that you recently did something which, here in America, Foreigner, one of the biggest FM rock bands of the 70s and 80s, and you recently did something with Lou Gramm called Rock meets classic. What was that all about?
Oh, that was so cool. That was so great. Yeah, and Lou is a fantastic, fantastic person, and still a great musician. I mean, with all that he's been through. Well, that was a cool shindig, actually. After Matt and I recorded all of the songs for the Kiska Somerville project, we hit it off so well, and everything went so smoothly. He asked me to also be a part of this Rock Meets Classic, which he was in charge of.
Oh, cool.
And, basically it featured Dan McCafferty from Nazareth, you know, Love Hurts.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Him, then Bobby Campbell from Toto, which, I mean, how cool was it, you know, doing like Africa and Rosanna and Hold the Line and you know, those greatest hits from Toto.
Classics.
And then Lou Gramm also doing their Foreigner's greatest hits, accompanied by a rock band and a 30-piece orchestra, the Prague Bohemian Symphonic Orchestra. So that was just really incredible. And, you know, I've done backing vocal work and stuff, but I'm not in the position anymore where I necessarily need to go on tour as a backup singer.
Right.
But
right.
I could not turn that down. No way, you know. And I'm going on tour with them again in January because it was just so much fun last time.
And was this was this in the States or in Europe?
This was in Europe. This was in Europe.
Yeah, because so, I didn't remember it coming through the New York, New Jersey area. I'd love to see that.
Oh, I really wish that they would do it through North America because I think people over there would love it too. And, I mean, you know, everybody knows those songs. So, I don't know why they don't do it, but I guess it's just put on by a European company. And, so they stick to their own territory. But, this time, let's see, Dan McCafferty is, on board still. Lou Gramm is, Ian Gillan from Deep Purple,
awesome.
And then Steve Lee from Godhard was supposed to be on the tour too, and so we were so upset,
yeah.
You know, when we got the news of what happened of this accident. So I don't know what they're going to do about that, but in any case, it's still bound to be, you know, a great tour coming up, and so that's the Rock Meets Classic.
Cool. Now, you've done so much work with everybody from Epica to After Forever to Camelot. I mean, the list just goes on and on. What are some of your career highlights? If you could share one or two with us, that would be great.
Oh, man. You know, I can't pick favorites. I really can't. Everything is like, you know, they're all my kids. So each band, each new artist or who, you know, whatever project I've done, people I've worked with, they're all just, I guess, part of the puzzle, you know. It's like my path anyway. I grow, I learn, I meet new people, and that's the most exciting thing for me, is just always having a new challenge and meeting and working with new people. And, you know, a lot of the times we got repeat customers, so that's cool, because you know you're doing something right. But I have to say, though, the Avantasia tour was like the tour with Epica and the Avantasia tour. That was just so fun. And gotta say, like, basically at the end of the Avantasia tour in 2008, I was on tour with Epica in North America for a month. That was like in April, May 2008. Then from June to August, I was on tour with Avantasia. So, I mean, it was like boom, boom, two huge tours back to back. And at the end of the Avantasia tour, we played Wacken. We were headliner for Wacken. And, I mean, almost 100,000 people.
Wow.
Singing along with you and waving their hands. I have to say that was probably, one of the coolest things ever.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to the Avantasia tour coming up again.
And I was also reading on your somewhere online that you do a lot of kind of behind the scenes stuff too, like vocal coaching with a lot of different bands.
Yeah, that started off as vocal coaching. It really, I did more co-writing and producing than anything else. I kind of, you know, always laughed at the vocal coaching title because I was just a glorified cheerleader that would, you know, that would write songs with people.
Right.
So, I've done a lot of stuff. I mean, it's like I said, it's very fulfilling, and I've grown a lot as a person, as a musician. I mean, I'm multilingual. It's just living over here and doing the work that I've done has been nothing but, yeah, one big long adventure. And, I'm fluent in German. I speak Dutch, Italian,
wow.
Some Spanish. So you don't have that, you know, if you don't live over here and constantly work with the people and stuff like that. So, I've done a lot of behind the scenes things from, you know, the vocal coaching, engineering, recording people, you know, on the technical side anyway, and doing editing and all the computer based, things that are possible these days with Pro Tools and stuff, and producing and writing and doing singing choirs and backing vocals and doing guest appearances and stuff. I mean, it's just, I love it all. I love it all. And if it got to the point where I'd have to pick, it'd be tough. But it's a luxury problem, I guess.
Now, when you were growing up, who were some of your favorite singers?
Oh my gosh. I'm a big dork, and I'm from a musical family. So I grew up, you know, my family, every time they would get together, we would have hootenannies, and there was a lot of Peter, Paul, and Mary, and John Denver, and Paul Simon, you know, Simon and Garfunkel being sung. So I grew up with that, and on my from my dad's side anyway, because he's a folk singer-songwriter. And my mom was like a, I don't know, she was like a strange breed of like hippie and rocker chick. She listened to, Black Sabbath and Jimi Hendrix and Antonio Carlos Jobim. I mean, she was like over the board. So I grew up with all kinds of stuff like that. And from my mom came the more, you know, rockier, I guess the rock influence. But I never listened to metal until I started working, you know, with bands in the scene. So, yeah, it's kind of funny how you end up in places that you don't necessarily ever plan on being. But I love it.
And you also, I was listening to some of your other music online. And, I mean, you also do a lot of music outside of the metal genre. Do you have any plans for another non-metal project or album coming up?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I've been recording songs here and there for my next solo album. Although I must say it's probably going to be a little bit darker than Windows was. Probably not any less eclectic, but, yeah, I mean, you can't work in this scene and not be heavily influenced by it. And I'm not a poser or anything, you know. I'm not out there. I'm not going to any metal concerts or rocking it out to, like, you know, Pantera in my free time or something. There are bands that I really like from the scene, but I have to say, when I came over to the dark side, if you you know, want to put it. My mom says, was when I did HDK with Sonic Holmes, that was released last year. That was like the heaviest thing that I'd done thus far in my career. And I loved it. I loved it. They say in German, you lick blood, which sounds disgusting, but and it means, you know, basically once you've had a taste of it, you want more. So, yeah. Yeah, so I've been writing a lot of heavier, darker stuff in the last year or so.
Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We look forward to hearing that stuff, and we also encourage all the Talking Metal listeners to go to our show notes today on talkingmetal.com and use the links to go to iTunes to download the Kiske Somerville album that we've been talking about here today. So thank you so much,
Amanda. Well, great. Thanks a lot, Mark.
And if we could get a Talking Metal ID from you saying your name and you are listening to Talking Metal.
No problem. Sure. Are you ready?
You bet.
Hi, this is Amanda Somerville, and you are listening to Talking Metal.
Great. Thanks so much, and thanks for staying up late to call us.
Oh, hey, no problem. This is early for me. Are you kidding?
Okay.
Thanks, Mark. You take care.
Have a good night. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.
Just a deja vu from nowhere. I hide myself. My feelings were hurt long ago. Just curious in the middle of a lonely road. I turn myself away through the dirt.
Or is it just the end alone?
That was Mikael Kiske and Amanda Somerville with Silence.
That's right.
What a great tune.
Yes, it was great to talk with Amanda, and it seems like an interesting woman who has a lot of cool stuff going on in and outside of the metal world. What are we listening to here? A little Miley Cyrus here at Smith's. Interesting choice. Yeah, John can't hear me. I got the headphones on 10, so I
maybe I should wear the headphones.
Yeah.
Because I was just commenting.
I was commenting Miley Cyrus playing here on the jukebox at Smith's. Anyways, Q-Ball is now officially Ron from Return to Earth, that is.
Coming up, Q-Ball from Return to Earth.
And, so we will shut off the recorder here, the garage band, and await Ron from Return to Earth.
Hey guys, Astronomy here, coming from Smith's Bar, New York City. We are joined by our very special guest, Ron from Return to Earth. You guys may know him as Q-Ball. What's up?
Just hanging out here with little Sean Kingston. Reggae rocking in the background, my favorite music. Sean Kingston all the way, baby.
Cool. Ron, thanks so much for checking back in with Talking Metal. I was flipping through the pages of Revolver magazine, and there you were. A picture, article, everything. Return to Earth, have a brand new record out. Automata. Am I pronouncing that right?
That's very good. I like how you enunciate the T, Automata.
Basically, the pronunciation, though, is correct.
Very European, yes.
Very cool. Now, let's talk about this record. This is the second record, I believe, right, for Return to Earth, and refresh our memory as to who's in the band, and then we'll talk a little bit about the album.
The first album was self-released on my label, Bald Freak Music, and the lineup consists of myself on vocals, Chris Penny, who you may know from Coheed and Cambria, one of the founding members of Dillinger Escape Plan on drums, and my longtime friend, Brett Aveni, on guitars. And we started making the second album in early 2010, actually late 2009, actually. We were prepared to release it on our own again. And we decided, you know what, the record's a little heavier. It's a little more on the metal side of things than the first album was, a little denser. Let's kind of shop it around a little bit. And one of the first people we brought the album to was Brian Slagle over at Metal Blade. And we got instant feedback from him that he really enjoyed it. He wanted to release it. So he said, let's go. Let's do it. And there we are. Here we are. Came out about 2 months ago. I think 2 months ago today, actually. Happy anniversary.
Well, congratulations on that. And how was it for you who have a label to do an album with another label? How did that work?
Well, I had some experience signing a band that you guys are probably familiar with. Pirate metal band called, exactly, Swashbuckle. I did basically the same thing. I released their first album, and then Nuclear Blast came a call and wanted to release their second album. And it made me think that, you know, since then, Swashbuckle's toured the world, you know, 2-3 times over. They've been in and out of the country. They released two albums in Nuclear Blast, and it kind of raised their profile. And Nuclear Blast did what I couldn't do for Swashbuckle, put them on tour, get them the exposure that they deserved. And we felt that Metal Blade could do the same thing for Return to Earth, except this time it was my band, so we felt like we had more creative control over what we wanted to do. And we kind of went into that with the knowledge that whoever we worked with or whoever wanted to work with us would have to be cool with that. And Metal Blade has been very cool with that, so we're happy with the partnership so far.
Very cool.
Cool. And as far as the world of Q cue ball goes, do you have anything going on right now? Any more projects with Bumblefoot or anything like that?
Well, ever since Bumble went on the road with Guns N' Roses, it's been very difficult for me to put an entire album worth of material out. So what I decided is to make life easier for him. The guy mixes my stuff, he masters my stuff, he engineers my stuff, he plays records on my stuff, he sings backing vocals. He's the unsung, you know, partner in Cue Ball. I decided, let me keep things fresh and do a song a month. Very collaborative project in the sense that I wanted to work with different people this time around. I did a couple of songs with some old bandmates. And then I recently did a song with Bumblefoot that we released called Sinful Nuns that came out digitally this past month in September. And I'm about to release a new single with Chris and Brett from Return to Earth. Cue Ball song called The Night Stalker in time for Halloween, which is coming out on Thursday. Is this live? Because if it's not, it'll be out by the time you hear this, God damn it.
Yeah, no, this will go up after Halloween. And I know you said you're working with other people. I just wanted you to keep Astronomy
John
in mind.
Astronomy,
he is available if you'd like him on the record.
Absolutely. I mean, I would love...
I'm kidding.
All right, fine, you're out then. I was already... We would have done one right here.
Astronomy is available for anything. Guitar playing, bar mitzvahs, drumming, singing, hanging out, anything you might need. I am available. I am very good
for
at paperwork and organization.
Well, the idea was to kind of light a fire under my own ass and light a fire under the ass of fellow musicians and photographers and artists and stuff like that. And it's been real fulfilling so far because I got Return to Earth is kind of my real world band, and Cue Ball I can kind of play by my own rules, and these are the rules that I'm playing by right now, and the songs are coming out really good. I'm real happy with the way things are going.
Cue Ball, I gotta ask you, where did you record the new Return to Earth stuff?
We went up, Chris rehearses up in a studio up in Dover, New Jersey called Backroom Studios. We tracked the drums there, we tracked the vocals there. But mainly, it was still very much a DIY project. We delivered a full album to Metal Blade, and they were thrilled about that because they didn't have to pay for the recording costs. But, you know, we take pride in the fact that in today's digital day and age, we're pretty self-sufficient, and we put out a pretty good product without the benefit of a huge budget. So,
now, do you have a studio in your own apartment or house?
I just moved. I bought a house in Staten Island. I have a studio, like a little one-room studio down in my apartment. In my house, in my basement. Brett has a studio in his basement, in his house. And, of course, Bumblefoot has his set up in Princeton, New Jersey. So there's no loss of available spaces to record some quality music if we need to. It's all about doing it on our own. We don't do things with exorbitant costs. And the model for how to release a record nowadays is different than it was, as I'm sure you guys know,
right,
5, even 2, 3 years ago as far as... you know, breaking the bank to put out something. So,
now you mentioned Swashbuckle earlier. You released their first record, and they've gone on. Nuclear Blast was their second record, right? What was the name of that record? This Bringing Scurvy Back, right?
Bringing Scurvy Back.
It's a single.
Was a single from Back to the Noose, which was their second album, and they just released a new album on Nuclear Blast called Crime Always Pays, and I stay in touch with those guys sporadically. I just spoke to their original drummer who was in the band when I signed them. He's trying to me to get to sign their new project. So, Ball Freak Music is about just keeping it in the family. Between Bumblefoot, the guys in Return to Earth, the guys in Swashbuckle, we're always collaborating, we're always doing things together, kind of create our own little army of musicians, our own band of merry men, so to speak. And it's not a full-time job, but it's a really, really time-occupying second job for me, so.
Kind of like Talking Metal is for us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lately, there's been not much payment from it.
Ron, I got a question for you. We used to live in the same neighborhood, Newport, Jersey City, where Talking Metal, you know, got its start. And how's it living in Staten Island in an actual house? I mean, congratulations to you.
I love it, man. I mean, I grew up in Brooklyn. And I'm used to being surrounded by people and being attached on all sides. And I was just sick of it when I moved to Jersey City, which, ironically, I was there earlier today, right in your neck of the woods. And I kind of had that feeling of deja vu that it was more of like a yuppie sort of environment for me, which again is not my speed. Staten Island is kind of like the suburban Brooklyn, as far as I'm concerned. I got more space. I'm not attached on either side. I have my basement, which is strictly Ball Freak Music headquarters. I have people that I have staff now. People come and go around. I have a separate entrance in the back, and people come and we do the mailings, and we have meetings, and I make my music down there. And it's just nice and quiet. You know, I have a wife and a dog, and it's really, I'm done. I'm in my mid-30s now, and I don't need the noise and the nonsense anymore. I'm real happy where I am.
And are you still doing work in the radio business? I know you were doing some FM work for a while with actually some pretty big-name people, but are you still doing that stuff?
My quote-unquote day job is I produce for a syndicated morning show here in New York City, Elvis Duran in the Morning Show. I've been working in radio for 13 years, basically since I graduated from college. And my job with Elvis is a great opportunity for me to kind of hone my skills as far as engineering goes. I work in Pro Tools every day, and I get a lot of celebrities walk in and out the door. And maybe not the same world that I live in, but it's kind of like a daily homework assignment where I kind of see how things work on that level and how the culture of radio and the music business still exists on that level. And I take my notes and I kind of apply it to my own world of independent, crazy rock and pop and metal that I'm dealing with. Plus, obviously, it pays the bills. And that, in today's economic climate, especially here in New York City, that's something that I'm proud to still be doing after all this time.
You know, it's interesting. I know you run your own label, and a band like Accept, for example, who has sold through the course of their career, which dates back to probably 78 or something, has sold over, I think, 9, maybe it's 12 million records. Let's say 12 million records. I'm pretty sure that's what their publicist told me recently. But their new record came out. They had this guy, Andy Snipe, produce it, who's this great metal producer. The album is actually very, very, very good. It doesn't have Udo, so it's not the original lineup, but it's still a great Accept record done in their traditional metal style. It sold less than 2,000 copies its first week out in the States. I can't imagine they made a profit on this. I would think they probably lost money on the record. Is it possible for musicians to make money? I mean, obviously Lady Gaga's making money, but your average musician, is it possible to make money not performing live but selling music anymore? As a label guy, can you answer that question?
You know, I went out to L.A. a couple of months ago. Brian Slagle at Metal Blade invited me out with a bunch of industry players, from booking agents to promoters to label guys to agents to people like me who are running their own little business on the side. And that was a question that the predominant question that came up was, how can we monetize our bands in today's day and age? And it's a real struggle now. The game has changed. There's that very small window. You mentioned Lady Gaga, and I live in that world with my radio job where I see the Ushers and the Lady Gagas, and the machine that has been churning out bands like that is still going strong, but it's diminished so much. And for metal bands and for hard rock bands and bands that aren't getting support on the radio, aren't touring their balls off, it's very difficult. I made a lot of money doing licensing for Cue Ball, and that's kind of how I started the label back in 2005. Now the learning curve is that everybody knows about the licensing. Everybody knows you can sell your song to a video game company or to Apple or to a car commercial, and that's where the money is. Or get your song on a movie soundtrack, and it's hard to do that cold. You have to know people. You have to be able to present it to somebody without being a complete stranger to them. And the answer to your question is yes, there is a way, but it's becoming increasingly difficult to find out how to do it. To me, having my radio job, having a label, having two bands, it's almost like, let me see how much shit I can throw at the wall and see what sticks, and maybe one thing can complement the other, and so on and so forth. And slowly but surely, these projects are kind of serving the other projects to the point where listen, the label's not folding. I'm not declaring bankruptcy. I'm not sleeping on a bed of money at night. But, you know, we made the Return to Earth album on a shoestring budget. We got a nice advance from Metal Blade. And we sunk that money back into making what will hopefully be another record or two. And at this point, that's all I really care about. I want to be able to keep making music without having to sink into my own pocket and break my piggy bank. As far as Accept goes, you know, you're talking about bands that are on a different world and a different, you know, landscape than I am, in the sense that these are heritage rock bands, and you guys deal with those bands all the time, that you're fans of those bands. Judas Priest and, you know, Yes is touring without the lead singer, and they're still calling themselves Yes. I mean, I don't know if they're making money. Journey singing with a little Filipino guy singing in Journey. And yet, you know, they're playing. They're still viable and they're still vital. People are still buying the music. You know, for a guy like me who doesn't have that, you know, take Nine Inch Nails and Radiohead, bands like that who've been around before they decided to start giving their music away for free. You know, they have that advantage that I don't have. So it's a struggle, man, but I'm still waiting to find out what, something's got to give, you know. At some point, something's going to implode and we're going to find out what the next opportunity to make money is.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't know if that's going to be next year or it's going to be 30 years, you know, but eventually that will happen for sure.
I got a question for Ron, and I don't want you to give away your trade secrets, but I really admire the fact that you broke into soundtracks and movies and all this stuff early on, and how did that come about?
I owe a lot of that to our friend Bumblefoot, who, when I started putting the Cue Ball albums out, he'd already had struck some deals with Bun & Murray, which is a company that produces a lot of the MTV shows like Real World, and you know, Battle of the Sexes and all that stuff. And seeing as he was intimately involved in the project, you know, he suggested that I send it along to his people. And since then, that's really been my motto, is to basically licensing first. I could put the album out on iTunes just like anybody else. I can stream a song on MySpace. I could get a record in a mom and pop record store. But at the end of the day, that's not going to make my investment back for a recording. Whereas, you know, with the licensing situation, I might strike lightning here or there. A commercial here, a soundtrack there. You know, and then you get royalties. And if you're all buttoned up with your ASCAP and your BMI and you know what you're doing with Sound Exchange and CSAC, and you know the business end of things, if you throw enough darts at the wall, hopefully you'll hit a bullseye every once in a while and put some money in your pocket. And that's really what it's all about for independent musicians right now, is being able to maintain, you know?
Excellent.
Cool. Well, Q-Ball, we'd love to get into some new music right now from Return to Earth. What would you like to play for the Talking Metal listeners?
Let's try Night of the Exploding Razors is one of my favorites from the album. It's kind of got an anthemic Faith No More sort of vibe. I wrote the lyrics to this one, and it's the refrain is, we got to get it right this time, and that's kind of the theme of the album and the theme of my musical career, is just trying to reinvent ourselves and trying to figure out the best way to kind of break out to the masses. And this is the best album that I've ever been a part of, the best band that I've ever been a part of. Chris is obviously, you know, an immensely talented drummer, and he's a big influence on a lot of drummers, young drummers out there. And we really had a lot of fun making this record, and we really tried to outdo ourselves. And this is an album that has been getting some good press. Hopefully it'll catch some fire. And, you know, thanks to guys like you, we got to get it right this time. Let's hope we do it. So, yeah, I'm going to have some beer.
Cool. Night of the Exploding Razors here on the Talking Metal Podcast. Check out the new issue of Revolver Magazine for an article on Return to Earth.
gotta
gone.
Put up a fight.
Everyone is gone. Everyone is gone.
We'll keep on
everyone
coming.
Everyone is gone.
We gotta
gone.
Put up a fight.
Everyone is gone. Everyone is gone.
We'll keep on coming.
Everyone is gone. Everyone
we gotta put up a fight.
Guys, we are checking out here from Smith's in Midtown Manhattan.
We wanted Smith's Bar, where the men are men and the women are too.
Bud Friendly is always the guy that knows what's going on. Sometimes astronomy can't see very well, so he may not notice that the women are women or maybe men.
All righty.
Just kidding, guys.
Well, anyways, let's get into some new music by Firewind. This is a song called Chariot by Gus G and Firewind. And before we do that, just real quick, again, a big thanks to Ed down in Kentucky for looking over our hard drive. Hopefully it works
out
for
the best. Yeah, thank you, Ed.
And I wanted to give a shout-out to Max in the UK who sent me an email. He and some of his schoolmates have been digging the Talking Metal podcast. So thanks, Max, for listening.
Thank you, Max.
Appreciate the support, and thanks for spreading the word. And also, a big shout-out to Nurgle from Behemoth, who is a former guest on Talking Metal. Great guy. I remember hanging out with him
on
Nurgle's
amazing.
His tour bus at Ozfest back a few years ago. He is suffering from leukemia. He's fighting it. He is confident that he is going to pull through and made it clear that he is still faithless, and you know he's doing this on his own, but he's gonna fight it. So good luck
if
to you.
If anybody
can
beat this, it's Nurgle.
Yeah, definitely.
And without
on
a doubt.
That note, we will maybe play some Behemoth in a future episode. But let's end with Chariot by the band Firewind. Go buy Return to Earth on iTunes or at your CD store. They are out in Metal Blade. We're going to have links up in today's show notes. Of course, they open your iTunes and take you directly to the Return to Earth page. And they also, we get a little kickback on that. So it's a good way to support Talking Metal. You can also buy a t-shirt in our store section on talkingmetal.com. And I guess that's it, right, John?
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, thanks for listening. And I want to send another thanks out to Ron from Return to Earth. Thanks again, Ron.
Thank you, you metal maniac. No glasses today?
They are on here. They're right here. They are.
All right. Just checking.
Still have them with us. And Bud Friendly, thank you again for being the main man behind Talking Metal.
Yeah, and thanks for
thank
those.
Thank you very much.
We got some new.
I'm dead.
We got some new Bud Friendly intros that we will.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Debuting shortly. Again, this is Chariot by Firewind.